Leader Talk.
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 Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Dawson. Welcome to Leader Talk. This show is proudly brought to you by Brainiac. Each week, we are meeting with incredible leaders from around the world to discuss all things leadership and business insights. Each person coming on this talk show has given up their valuable time for one very clear purpose: to give back to small and medium business owners. Many of us will agree that our ability to clearly describe and position our products and services will help with business success. And today, my co-host CEO of Peerlite, Gus Arianto, and I are fortunate to chat to our guest speaker, Todd Towers, founder and CEO of Farm Boy Fine Arts. Farm Boy Fine Arts is an international art advisory with a hand in hospitality, health and wellness, and fine art leasing, with their operations being based in Canada. We know that art has different value to different audiences, and Todd's ability to position his products and business can help us all learn how to better position our own products and services. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hello, Todd. Thank you for donating your time, especially on the last day of most organizations. Today is the last day, and you donating your time for Leader Talk. Can't say enough. Thank you, man.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, as entrepreneurs, we're always working. So happy to be here and crossing time zones. It's great. It's nice to see your faces.
Thank you.
Fantastic. And Todd, we ask all our wonderful guests two fun questions whenever we begin Leader Talk. So we've prepared yours and we'd love to ask them, if you could live anywhere in the world for 1 year, where would you live?
Having grown up where I grew up, in a really rural environment in Western Canada, a province called Alberta, a small town called Red Deer, on a family ranch here that my family homesteaded. And, you know, it's always great to be here. It's it's a place that I most identify with. And of all the places I travel in the world, this is one that's closest to my heart. So I love being here. That's sort of number one ranks. But I always, you know, I was just in Miami for Art Basel a week or so ago. And you know, Miami is sort of like a wonderful, very rich cultural place. So it's a fun place to be, a complete different type of place than being here on the ranch. But two are welcome to me, but the ranch sort of holds number one.
Well, fantastic. And if you could magically become fluent in any language, what would it be?
You know, it's funny. I mean, we've done opportunities and deals all around the world, and we do a lot of work in the Middle East, and I love Arabic. I think it's a beautiful language, but whenever I've been in China, and certainly mainland China, I feel completely lost. So, you know, knowing Mandarin would be something that would be very helpful to me, and would be a welcome language to have in my back pocket.
So Mandarin.
Sure.
What about you, Gus? What if you could magically become fluent in any language?
Probably I will learn French because for some reason it sounds complicated. I think if I suddenly can speak French like a lot of people in Canada, I probably will be impressive. I don't know. I can say only few words in French, but I think that's the language I wanna learn. Oh, yeah,
fantastic. And look, Todd, you know, I gave a brief introduction about yourself at the beginning, but we were hoping you could tell everyone a bit more about yourself and also about Farm Boy Fine Arts.
Sure, happy to. Thank you. So Farm Boy is a company I founded 20 years ago. You know, funny enough, it was my nickname when I was going through art school. So as I mentioned, I grew up here. I mean, I'm in Alberta now. I live in Vancouver. The company is headquartered in Vancouver, but we always come home for Christmas and spend time here during Christmas and summer at the ranch. So I'm back at my family property. But growing up, I left the ranch, went to art school. My nickname was Farm Boy, and as I exited art school, founded this business. Really under the principle that I loved art. I was passionate about it. I saw the need for it to be in other places other than galleries and institutions, and wanted to bring art to, you know, other environments, corporate environments, hospitality, healthcare environments. And really, that was the vision. Our mission's always been to change lives with art, and we've sort of led through that for the last 20 years. So, you know, sort of founding that business 20 years ago to where it started, sort of with one client, to you know, having the fortune, good fortune, to support our clients all around the world, from global hospitality luxury clients to, we are Ford Motor Company's global art advisor, so we support Ford Motor Company all around the world, to healthcare environments and supporting hospitals and clinics in lots of different spaces and typologies. It's been a really wonderful journey, and great to see my team's ability to impact people's lives through art in each of those differing spaces. So
fantastic. And what a great success story.
I have a question straight away. Like, I love the way you describe your mission to change life through art. I mean, we all love art, I assume, and art is more than painting. You know, music is art. People, I think, can describe art in a different way. But, you know, that's such a strong mission or vision, you know, to change life through arts. Can you share with us more about that part? Because that's really, really interesting how you describe it.
Yeah, happy to. I think so. Art for a lot of people is intangible. You know, we know we love it, whether that's theater, whether that's music, whether that's dance, you know, the written word or visual arts. For me, I've really felt that, you know, our focus was visual arts and placing that in spaces where people could enjoy it. So the vision to really try to change people's lives with art isn't upon this always this life shattering event. But it's really about, how do we make people see something, take pause, enjoy it, learn from it, engage with it, be challenged by it, and contribute to their well-being in their life. And there's lots of ways that we do that in differing business sectors and typologies. But in the very simplest form, it's when you meet something, you look at it and you can engage with it and think, I've just seen something that's made me feel a little better, or it's contributed to my well-being today. So in terms of our business process and practice, we've never done anything outside of that lens. We've always approached any new business sector, any new idea that we have come into the business through that lens. If it doesn't meet that, we don't do it.
You know, sorry, Ned, I know we have a lot of questions that we want to ask Todd, but this part really resonated to me when we spoke, you know, a couple of days ago, Todd. You mentioned that, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but you know, even to the extent you actually do a research, which is, we will discuss that further, when people actually stop in the corridor to have a moment, whether it's 30 seconds, 20 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever it is, so they can refocus on their body. I mean, that is just like outstanding, right? Like when people talk about to change life, we kind of thinking change life mean, you know, giving people house, water, whatever it is, right? There's a lot of ways. But when you describe it to me, it's so simple yet so powerful to make people stop. Because what's missing in the world right now is the ability for people to pause. And you actually providing that in the world. Fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. I think in the process in which we help facilitate that management, manage that is in different sectors and typology. So let's give a couple examples. When we're producing artwork and placing artwork in a hospitality environment, so we've said for a very long time that when I started this business, art was sort of one of the last things you thought about when you're walking into a hotel. Quite literally, people would buy prints and just frame prints out from some print inventory. It had nothing to do with the hotel, nothing to do with the brand, nothing to do with the guest. But where we've taken it to is really an understanding of what we can do in a geocentric space to a client base, to a particular public that is in whatever geo region we're working in the world, and really work specifically to them. So we're speaking to that audience. So when someone walks into a hotel environment, They're identifying with something that's maybe close to them, that resonates with them, and what makes them inherently want to spend more time in that space. So how does that roll up to a hotel? If I'm placing a great art collection in a hotel, then the net knock-on effect of that is that people want to spend more time there. So they come into the lobby, they think, oh, this is wonderful art. It looks great. It smells great in here. It's designed well. I'm going to sit down and have a cocktail, or I'm going to come back and have dinner. Well, that's revenue to the hotel. If the property's been thoughtful in how we roll out that art collection through the rooms, through the common areas, guest experiences, spas, lobbies, and all of that starts to work together through a narrative, which we will inevitably create with them and for them, people start to feel more connected to the experience in the space. Makes them want to come back, makes them want to stay longer, makes them potentially want to pay more for their room if it's really good. So these things are pieces of data that we pull from and really work to develop better art collections for our clients. If you look at it through the healthcare lens, specifically right now is a very, very trying time for all healthcare workers. So if I'm a nurse, I've just put in a crazy shift. I've walked, 15 kilometers from one end of the hospital to the other, and there's no place for me to take pause. My day gets even longer. So if we've done our job right, we can walk in, work with the architects and designers, and build points of pause for those workers, for those guests, people coming into the hospital to see loved ones, and for the staff themselves to be going by and see a wonderful piece of art. Maybe it's a lighting installation, maybe it's a digital piece, but maybe it's a physical or analog piece. And they have a moment to sit down, take pause and reflect, just gather themselves in that space. It recharges you and it makes you, more ready for the next whatever hour, 5 hours, 10 hours of your shift or day. So that's what we really focus on in those spaces of wellness. And we're to the point of research, we're looking at how we can better really attenuate that research to get actual physical data that the hospitals can use. So setting up, areas that we can test people, we can do set up blind rooms, put artwork in each one and have people go in and do cortisol tests to see which one's spiking, which one's bringing you down. And so that you can start to really work towards an art collection that is helping people heal and get better in their stay.
That's just amazing. And, Todd, when you were describing the artworks in hotels, for example, I clearly remember staying in a hotel in Dubai, and every single angle had this incredible artwork, whether it was a foyer with a grand piano, whether you're going to a lift. It was just so cleverly done. I don't know how many hundreds of photos the family and I took there, because everything was staged so cleverly and everything had a different atmosphere. You couldn't just take that photo to capture that entire level. You had to take it with every piece of artwork. So, it's incredible to actually hear from you just how much work goes into the selection process. It's not just we're going to pop that one there and that's going to work there. It's clearly a lot of research done.
It's a lot of research. It's a lot of understanding who your demographic is that you're serving, who your brand and client is. We really work with the brands to support them. And then understanding where they are in the world. So one hotel, it's maybe in a chain, is not going to look completely similar to one in Dubai. Would even look different than one in Abu Dhabi, because there's a slightly different demographic, and you want to have a different experience between Dubai and Abu Dhabi. So we really work to when we're building those collections, curate specifically for the region, the people, the typologies that we're in. And you, Natalie, you make a good recommendation or reference there, is when people are walking through a hotel and taking pictures, we these sort of Instagram moments that we talk about, there's a whole social connection there that you're relating about your experience. And that experience with the art now becomes part of your social experience and part of your, as we would sort of say, social flex, like the thing that identifies you with the places that you are when you show that. So art has a big contribution factor to that and a big value to the hotel and the brand.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And, I would want to know, you're really passionate, clearly, about what you do, and clearly a really passionate leader. How do you actually balance this passion with, you know, running your own business versus keeping this passion alive within the rest of your team? Because clearly you're the business owner, but it seems that everyone there is just so passionate about art.
So I think what we try to work really hard at Farm Boy is building a values aligned organization. So when we're looking at in terms of recruitment and bringing people on into the company, we look at those folks, we call each other farmhands. So net new farmhands have a particular interest and passion. They don't necessarily have to be art collectors or lovers of art, but there has to be an understanding and affinity towards a learning around it and sort of this feeling that it is important. We have that same value lens with our clients. So we're always looking to onboard both farmhands and clients through that same sort of value lens that appreciates art. And we're, you know, Farm Boy Fine Arts is called Farm Boy for a reason. We're not stuffy about it. We take our work very seriously, and we love art. Obviously, we're really passionate about it, but we're also very open and democratic in the process. So we're driving our intention through sometimes consensus. We really want people to get engaged. We want to help educate. We want to understand that everyone at the table has an equal experience and a different lens, but we're contributing to that, always that value of changing lives with art. So our farmhands that come into the business, they seem to really attach themselves to that, and they find value in that. And I also would extend to the point where we're seeing new recruitment. Certainly through COVID, this is not just us, this is everyone, I think, that's dealing with this. People are changing careers. They're looking at new ways to do things. They're looking at how they adapt their lives and going after things that they maybe were more passionate about, because life can be short and it's a strange time. So we're really finding people come to the business that are not just looking solely for a paycheck. They're really looking for, obviously, fair compensation and a great culture to be in, but they're chasing their passions too. And we're seeing a lot of folks come into the business that are aligning those pieces with us.
Wow, that's incredible the way you describe it. I have one question that come through. You know, come back to your vision or where you want to change life through arts. But business is a business. Means that you have an infrastructure of a business that you need to fund. You know, we all want to make a difference in the business. But every day you wake up, you need to understand the cost of running the business itself. How do you balance that? Because if everyone in your organization, I assume, thinking how to change, I mean, of course, we need to do that. I'm strongly believe in that, too. But how do you balance it between that and also running a business itself? I hope my question is clear there. I just want to learn from you where your vision are very, very infinite, you know, to change life through art, which is I like. But business itself on day-to-day basis required a lot of finite decision to keep that business going. How do you balance that?
So it's a great question, Gustav. And I would say that, you know, I went to art school and I grew up on a farm. So I'm no master business mind. You know, I didn't have a business education. I don't have an MBA. I didn't go to business school. I'm entrepreneurial and I love art. So I would preface that there was no clear 20 years ago finite plan about how I was going to make money at this. Right. It was if I have passion for this and there's a will, there's a way. Okay. So my early pricing systems were very rudimentary. But I would state that, you know, in looking at building, you know, an economic model that makes sense, it's obviously you have to build revenue, and the revenue has to be good revenue. So good revenue to us is a bit of a marriage between advisory services, where we support clients with our expertise, time, you know, and we charge for that, And then part of our other business is we actually, in selling other artists' work, we sell artists' work bundled into product, which would be framed, you know, arts and prints and things like that that get rolled out in hotels. Oh, my son just showed up.
That's okay.
So in that, you know, we build margin into that and obviously build the business model that makes sense. I mean, a very simple analogy was, when I started the business, I was serving clients and sort of placing art in kind of one environment. And that was a lot of work to build those stories and those narratives to make sense in that one space. Maybe it was a small business office or a restaurant. And I kind of looked at the hotel space by saying, thanks. Sorry, guys. This is what happens. About saying, if I went into a hotel environment and I did the same amount of work, but rolled it out across 500 hotel rooms or 2,000 hotel rooms, there's more margin there. So more money to be made by gross. So it was a very simple system to start. And it just, we had the opportunity to scale it and become more sophisticated in our business practice and modeling out our revenue and how we were going to do it over time.
I will repeat this at the end. If you have a passion and a will, there is always a way. And I think that I will put it also on my desk here, because I think that's great. You know, you openly said, hey, I'm not sophisticated on any way, but I have a passion about changing the life of others through art. And look at me now, international business. That's just amazing. Sorry, Nat, this is a topic that I, as
no,
you know.
No, it is. And there's so many questions we have for you, Todd. But one that I wanted to ask, you mentioned COVID-19, the uncertainty, challenging times. From a leadership perspective, how do you find yourself managing this uncertainty with your team? It's a kind of question. I mean, everyone manages it differently, but just curious to know, I mean, you're running this globally. So how do you actually manage this?
So it's a good question. And I think we're all learning from this, but I think, you know, entrepreneurs are good at pivoting. So I think when this hit us, we quickly pivoted. And we understood what we could and could not do within our own authority. The difficult piece for us, which we did not see coming, I've been through a couple of recessions before. Hospitality can be challenging in terms of those cycles, but this we did not see coming. We thought there was something coming in terms of the next, because things had been very bullish and there'd been a lot of development. We thought we might see a bit of a slowing coming into the next couple of years, but we did not expect this. So for us, the challenge was in hospitality business, serving our clients in cruise, serving our clients in hotels all around the world, went to zero, literally went to zero overnight. Like someone shut the light off on our business overnight. Fortunately, we had been pivoting and moving some of our work to advisory services with some of the Fortune sort of 50 clients and helping them in their spaces, which, you know, we could quickly pivot to, but still work inside of supporting our hospitality clients when needed and when ready. But maybe more pointed to your question would be, how do we manage that internally with our team? We really had to get an understanding of everyone's comfort at the organization, at the team's level, who was comfortable, and not everybody was comfortable at the same time, who could, we initially had to all work remote. So then it was, how do we prepare everybody to be remote immediately? So getting everyone set up to do that. And then when we could start to come back to the office, who's comfortable coming back to the office when? So phasing that, building out opportunities for people to connect either like this digitally or in person when appropriate and when we could. So, you know, it's definitely a challenging time, still continues to be. We've got a new variant around and we're still working through some things. But, you know, we just as entrepreneurs have to roll with it. And I think everyone in the small, you know, medium business space has had to and has been hit hard by this. I think one thing that we did do that was probably different was we looked at this as an opportunity to reinvest in our talent pool and really build our team up. So while we were not 100% busy with hospitality work, we were busy in other sectors, and we wanted to onboard more folks that could support that business and elevate those clients and support them. So we were actually hiring through this process, which can get a little nerve wracking when you're dealing with, you know, losing part of your revenue through a business that you're used to having it. But we invested in the team and in the people with the, you know, with the understanding that this isn't forever and we're going to see our way through this and coming out the other side to be more proactive and be prepared for what we believe will be a very bullish market, because people want to travel. They don't not want to travel. And those hotels and cruise ships and everybody has to get back to work. So we've really hired into that to support it on the next side.
You know, it's funny, Todd, when I listen to you explaining about let's pivot the business. Let's, you know, because, you know, as a business owner, you know, when you hit in one way and this is your passion, the business passion you have, you need to find a way. From the outside, it's easy to understand. Yeah, of course, you need to pivot because otherwise you die. Because if one door closed and you just stand in front of the door, then you die. But I'm saying it because in a different lens, I'm leading an organization, but I'm not a business owner myself. So when we pivot, the money comes from someone else. Now, in your case, the money comes from you. Pivot comes with a lot of risk, a lot of, I'm assuming, loneliness at night for you to even thinking what would happen if it didn't work. What's your message to a lot of small and medium business owner that need to pivot, especially during the toughest night when they feel like, you know, revenue is closed one way. Now you have a money, limited money, as like many business owners, and you want to use that money for something that no guarantee. Is there any particular key ways to actually improve your sleep? Maybe that's the question. I mean, it must be a sleepless night to use the money in something that you call risk.
How yeah. do you manage that? Yeah. So, you know, I've got the good fortune. I've got a good business partner. So the two of us own the business together. And I think having that as a leader in support, there's often, you know, when you're owning and running a business, there's not a lot of places that you can go and talk to in the heat of the moment. So, you know, we're fortunate we can bounce things off one another and we share that risk. So I guess we share those sleepless nights together. But, you know, I would say that, you know, anyone that's going through it certainly is, you have to feel very confident about where you're going. You have to put it on the line. You know, when you don't have, which we don't have a external investment, we don't have backers, it's us, it's our money. If it goes poorly, we have to shoulder that. We have to shoulder that risk. But in some ways, having that responsibility, it makes it all the much more meaningful and it makes your decision-making very clear. So, you know, you get to the root of what you have to do very quickly when you're in those situations. And the decision-making, although very foggy and there's a lot of sleepless nights, you can get to that point of clarity about what you have to do quite quickly. It's not easy, but, you know, it's what we all do as entrepreneurs, isn't it?
Yes, and I'm always, you know, Natalie is a business owner. You are a business, like, looking at both of you, I always impress because the money we talk about is impacting your home directly. Like that's just amazing. You need to have a lot of passion and will, like what you said.
Yeah so my business partner and I often talk about this. We're looking through the lens of our team, of our farmhands. So, you know, it's not only our responsibility, it's our responsibility for them. So how do we manage this best through for the team? What's our best outcome? That does come with some tough decisions, as you know, sometimes, but we're always looking at, you know, we've got some long-term folks at Farm Boy. We've got people that have been with us for 14 years. So, you know, we're really, in essence, the farmhands are our family. So we're thinking about that decision-making is tough, but it's not just for us, right? We have to think about how it affects everybody in the organization. So,
Yeah, that's fantastic. And look, I know we didn't really touch on leadership, Gus, but you're so passionate about the business insight. So we're going to kind of move it now officially to that side. And we want to bring in more about the question about, you know, pricing and understanding values. So, you know, we all know that art is abstract, but curious, and I have been curious since the moment we had our first conversation, is how do you actually understand its value? And then on top of that, know how to correctly price the artwork, for example.
And right. I think this is important, just to add, I think this is important for our audience, Todd, because most business have a tangible products, whether it's a noodle shop, a mechanic, a plumbing shop. We have a tangible product. Arts is, whilst you have the product, the value itself, that's what we want to learn from you. If you can create value on arts, I think we can create value on many, many things.
Absolutely.
Right. So I think when we look at it, we look at there is an existing art market out there. There is an existing collector art market, and art is it is an asset. There is an intangible value to art, but there's also an actual value traded on marketplaces and primary and secondary markets. So in the collectible space, I'll give you sort of a piece of data. Out of 100% of the art traded in the world, you would see about 2% of that would be considered sort of blue chip and highly collectible. And those are often things that we hear about. We hear about this, you know, Warhol that sold for this Jean-Michel Basquiat painting that sold for $100 million or $80 million, or this Van Gogh that sold for this. Those are in a very, very, very narrow market. Most of the art traded in the world trades it under $15,000. So most of that market, and of that market, a lot of it would be considered decorative. It would be considered, you know, artists that are making works or work that is coming into the market that is almost, it's bought, and it's bought through a decorative lens. It's bought because I like it. It's bought because I want this in my home. It's bought because it fits the space for me and I register something emotionally with it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that that piece is going to be the next Van Gogh, or that artist is not going to be the next Van Gogh. So you can't bucket the art market into one thing. It has its layers and its stratas. So when we're developing our collections for folks, we're really looking at it through the lens of how we build a curated experience. So some of that artwork that we're putting in place will be of collection value, and some of it will be more of decorative value. And that allows, through a pricing structure, for organizations to get around it. So they have a budget, they're doing a renovation to a hotel, or they're building out their corporate headquarters. Not every piece or placement of art has to be investable or return on investment. Some of it just really fits that emotional need and connection to the brand at the time. So that we are able to really curate experiences that sort of toggle in between those deltas. If that does that make sense to you?
Yes.
And so, you know, we do also manage an art fund. So, you know, we manage a contemporary art fund here in Canada, the only one of its kind. And part of the reason that we started that was because A, we had a passion for art. B, we wanted to support artists. And see, we sort of saw that a lot of these folks that we're bringing these great art pieces to were looking at the values and going, man, that seems really expensive. I don't know if I want to take the risk on it. You know, it was a collectible piece. Maybe it's $100,000, or maybe it's $400,000, or maybe it's $50,000. So what we would do is step in and make the acquisition of that work. We would hold that work for them and lease it to them in their space, and then build a sort of tertiary collection around it that was more priced in a decorative lens that they could connect to and afford. And that's been an interesting piece as well. It gives them access without risk. It's a leasing agreement, sort of an off balance sheet piece, and they can have that piece, participate with it, and we sort of support them in it, own it, insure it, sort of manage it through that process. So it's just creating access, really.
Yeah. And also, when you're selling art, I think a lot of business talk about solution sell. right? You know, it's not just like we try to sell a product, but, you know, in business, in our business, unless you understand the problem and we provide solution, your product is irrelevant. And with ads, you must be the master of it, because you start talking about the ability to post, the ability to actually enjoy this. You don't actually go there and say, do you want to buy painting? I'm sure you are not doing that, because if one of your sales team going to somewhere, going to my company and said, do you want to buy this art? The first response will be no. So you must be an expert in understanding solution problems into your product that we can all learn. That's my
opinion. Well, I think we've got a great team. So I think our team comes to it through this lens of always, we want to change lives with art. So they're looking at whatever client through that client lens, all the stakeholders in the business and the users of that space, and looking at it through how do we help enhance this environment and make it better? And so it comes down to storytelling, really. How do we craft a narrative and a story that connects to people in place? And then we start to collaborate with artists and creatives, ours and external, to build out that collection that's meaningful and makes sense. So it's never us going into an environment and saying, you have to buy this. It's really a conversation about, well, who are you? What's your brand? Who do you represent? Where are you located? Who are your users and your people and your culture? And then we start to build out a red thread, a storyline that goes all the way through the business, and we connect that to through an art lens. We talk about it, we sort of say beyond art. You know, it's a piece of what we do is really connecting to experience and brand. And the relationship there could be physical art, it could be digital, it could be, you know, a sculpture, it could be an installation that's temporary, it could be public and private, but we're always looking through the lens of what is the user or the experience that we want them to have through that lens of art in their brand or in their location. So
yes, wow. That's just, Natalie, I'm not sure whether I'm trying to see alignment, but when you say beyond art, one of the tagline in my organization, we are a 70 years old company. And when I took over the company, I said, we have a tagline called Beyond Light, because our company is a largest manufacturer of lighting and supplier. And a lot of people ask, why Beyond Light? Because exactly what you say, Todd. Like, I mean, if we, whether it's plumbing, mechanical, noodle shop, kebab shop, if that's the only thing you hold on, then you can't be passing through a lot of challenges. We have to sit further. And I like the way you demonstrate all this through your conversation. Involvement, solution, what's your brand? How can we come and actually elevate your position? And I think that's one thing that SME can learn from you. The fact that as a business, you need to invest in time to think through this. And my question to you, do you actually have a process and a time where your team actually sit down configuring this, or it's become already, because you do it so well and you are a 20 years old business, like you don't need, or you actually with discipline say, okay, let's stop, let's think through this. Can you share with us what's the process that small business can do to configure?
I think to that point, I think it always starts with a conversation, and you have to get all the participants at the table. So you know, certainly in a space like art where it can be intangible to people, we really need to get buy-in from all. So we need to bring all the stakeholders to the table. We need to have a conversation about the vision for who they are, whether it's a brand or a specific location, a hotel or a corporate entity. We lend that conversation to starting through who they are. What does your brand represent? We look at their values. Do their values align to our values? Can we actually support you? And are we a good partner for you? And then from there, we really build out a roadmap, a strategy in terms of, through sort of a phased approach, how we can help build an art collection for them, or an art experience, whether it's through EGD, which is environmental graphic design. We do a lot of that in corporate spaces where we're developing quite literally custom wall covering and wallpaper that is artisanal in relationship and visual. It's connecting to an experience and it rolls up to the other art pieces that we're going to put, but it's starting to focus the brand into their place of whatever specific geo-region, whatever people or users of the space are there engaging with and connects to them. It's quite a simple experience when you actually go through it. I mean, we often say we know we've done a good job and we don't hear back because they just sort of walk through the space and they go, oh, it feels great. You know you've kind of connected there when you walk into an environment. And we know this from our own experiences going into hotels or corporate centers. You walk in, you have sort of that much time to go, it feels good or it doesn't feel good. So for us, it's sort of a litmus test. You're going to walk in and you're going to see some things. If you're a lighting consultant, you know, you want to be putting a great lighting package in the space that needs to connect to the design. As the art consultant, we want to be putting a great sort of art experience in there that's engaging so that your user, your guest feels, you know, that's a sort of a crazy word to use in sort of business language, but feels connected to the space and therefore is creating value that seems intangible, but it is actually quite tangible because they want to be there, spend their money, stay longer. They feel comfortable. They feel rewarded by being there through that net experience. So that's really how we approach it. But it starts with the key stakeholders and building alignment with them. And the best way to build alignment with them is to build a narrative or story that we can all connect to. And then once we can connect there, we can bring in artworks that are maybe a bit strange to them. If we can layer it back to the story, to the narrative that we all had consensus on and agreed to, then that allows us to move forward.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about this feeling, and I just want to share a local hospital recently had a new wing built. Beautiful. And this feeling that you explained, you walk through the original part of the hospital and you turn into the wing. Now, the lighting combined with the artwork, combined with the colors selected for the walls,
yep.
I actually went, wow, this is nice. I forgot that I was actually in a hospital for that moment.
Yep.
Until I moved into the other, got to the other wing, that corridor and what they created was a completely different atmosphere. And I forgot it created that, wow, nice feeling that I was actually forgot that I was in a hospital. So right. I can definitely understand where you're coming from with this feeling.
Yeah. So there was a hospital that we worked with an architectural firm, a great firm called HKS in America. The hospital was in Atlanta. It was called Piedmont. We were the art consultant advisor for that project. And when we looked at it, they were adding to the hospital. And part of what they had to do was they were taking over a street and adding a new wing. And part of the street was lined with these beautiful trees. And people were, you know, quite concerned that the trees were coming down. So what we wanted to do was really pay homage to that environment. It was sort of a neighborhood feel. It was lots of tree-lined streets. People felt that canopy when they were going to the hospital. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to reinvent that canopy. And we all know that when we go to hospitals, particularly now to your experience, when you're walking through these corridors, and you're walking through halls, and sometimes you don't know where you are. And traditional wayfinding would state, oh, you're on floor one or you're on floor eight, and it's this wing. So what we did, our team, creative team, came in and we said, well, why don't we build a canopy of flora and fauna, and we'll color each layer like a forest floor. So we go all the way up to the sky, we come all the way down to these darker earth tones. So that in by narrative, we're engaging the community, we're engaging that tree-lined sort of street that was there. We're talking about those trees, bringing them back in and building a canopy, and then doing it through a visual lens that acts as wayfinding. So you know that when you're on floor, sort of mid-tier, floor four, you're sort of in this other color. and you're moving up, you're elevating through color so that you know when you're one floor down, you're on a different color, you're on a different floor, and it starts to translate to you. And you, as a user, you're not going to get that, but you're going to feel it, right? You're not going to get it immediately, but once you start navigating through the space, you can quickly navigate and have an understanding of why. And then if you can dig into the story, you understand why certain sculptures are placed, why there are certain themes inherent to the project. And it all starts to build upon the experience of why, really.
That's great. You know what, Todd? You just have a solution for multi-story car parks. They randomly select the colors. I always get lost. But if we had some sort of starting earth, it would be brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, sounds like a new business line. Thanks, Matt.
Isn't it interesting?
It is really interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. Like the way you explain it, Todd. And I think this is where we all can learn from each other. I mean, like for business to learn from a global leading art business based in Canada, and you put a concept of something that I'm just thinking before. When I go to a hospital, you are right. Everything looked the same. The only difference that I, in Australia, mostly, we look to the floor, and the floor have different lines with different color. So we're following that line to where we go. But it's difficult to remember. But I think I will remember if the whole environment is actually reflecting where I am in that time, I will be no problem. I can remember, okay, we're going to the green level or something like that. Like, yeah. Because the feeling, you can't forget feeling, you can forget math.
That's right.
Anyway, like, I mean, it's you are on level three. Is it three? Is it four? Is it eight?
Right.
Green is green.
So isn't that fascinating? That's one thing as humans we all have. Doesn't matter what part of the world you're from, we all have that in common. We feel those experiences through art, whether it's music or performance or visual arts. There's a moment that you've witnessed something and it's emboldened in your mind forever, right? You have that meaningful touch point and it will always come back to you. And that's why I love art, is because it has that effect on you. And what's really enriching for us as a team is when we get the opportunities to work in different cultures with different people in different geo regions, and we can connect on that level. We might not even speak the same language. You know, we might not even be able to understand one another in our first conversations, but we can look at something and we can both have that same reference point and that same feeling. It, you know, for us, that's a really enriching experience to connect.
So can I just be like, I want to test this. Assume that you're not running Farmboy Arts, but you're running Farmboy Mechanics. Car Mechanics, same one, Farmboy Car Mechanics. As a car mechanics company, you are the managing director. How do you create... So I just want to get this right. So I totally agree with you. The minute your business can create an experience where your customer can feel it, that customer will stay with you. That customer will, because that's what's missing, you know. Car oil is a car oil, I guess. But how do you create a feeling if your services is a product like that? Like, is it any? Can you play it differently so we can understand? Like, just try your best, I guess. Sure. I'm putting you on.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I wouldn't know the first thing about running a car mechanics business, but I would say it comes down to the experience again. And I mean, if I'm driving a particular brand of car and I take it to take it in for service, well, when I walk into that service facility, I want to be greeted and I want to feel like I'm welcome and that my time in the most authentic way is being met honestly, and I am a valued customer. And you know, I think it's a very simple thing that translates all businesses. If we're just told to buy something and there's no care into why we're buying or what it is or how we actually connect to it, it's not that meaningful. and it's very transactional, and maybe we do it once or twice, maybe we have to, but the meaningful relationships and long-term sort of loyal customers are those that are treated through that lens of sort of authentic experiences and being connected to whatever it is that you are buying or servicing or you know, participating with. So, you know, you see car manufacturers do a very good job. I mean, Ford Motor Company does a really good job in engaging their customers today and how they choose to connect in future. I mean, they're making big changes too, as the new demographic and buyer is changing. I think that's also the other piece, is that we have to adapt. You know, we have to be open to the new consumer and what the market is asking of us to offer them. I think if we stop hearing that, then we're probably we're losing ground quickly.
And I agree. I mean, when we go to a car mechanics, it's one service that is quite common. They are very, very quick in expectation. We just say yes. Every question we look stupid. You know, even a question like what type of oil we can put. Do you have, the service is beyond just we take the car and the car can run. That right. Starting point where we come in, get greet well, they provide a time, extra minute to answer Natalie the type of oil with the different prices, isn't it? Like,
it's all people, isn't it? I mean, it's all people. It's, you know, that's a net result. We're going there to have something done, but it's really the process and the experience that we have along the way that determines our outcome. And if we want to go back, maybe we go to a different dealer. Maybe we sell that car. If that experience was terrible. I mean, think about it in terms of when more cars are becoming battery powered. I mean, they're not requiring oil, you know, they're not requiring the same types of service that we're used to. So, you know, if I was running that, I would be looking at, okay, if my money was in oil changes and all my cars are battery powered and I'm doing way less oil change, I'm not doing oil change because it's not a combustible engine anymore, then I should be thinking about, well, how do I engage my buyers, my clients to come in? So I'm looking at new social connections, maybe.
I mean, and that's the bingo of this topic today. I think for every business owner, at the end of the day, your business can go further when there's people coming back to your business.
Always.
And the only way people coming back is if they've experienced and they're feeling through the get-go is a positive experience.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is what we all know by running businesses. It's way harder to bring on a new client than to service an existing one, right? So the lift required to build a net new client it can be tough. And if you've got a great client, work to keep them.
And this all comes down to that customer lifecycle management, isn't it, Todd? Where you know you bring them in, but then it's about keeping them on.
Yeah, and it's what. What is the value that you provide to them? And I think sometimes we forget about that. In business, we're always thinking about what's revenue, you know, what's our next quarter going to look like? I've talked to certain folks certainly in the traditional agricultural space, you know, my history of my family, there's folks that they don't think 3 and 5 year business cycles. They think 100 year business cycles, right? They think, you know, what are we doing to the land over the next 100 years? Not how much money are we going to eke out in the next quarter. They don't think that way. So it's really understanding what your business is, what your customers are expecting of you and how you service them. And not just looking for that quarterly revenue target.
Definitely. And speaking of revenue, Todd, we got a lot of engagement when we started talking about, you know, pricing correctly. So I have no doubt there's listeners out there who are, you know, small or medium business owners who may possibly be struggling with understanding how to price their products or their services. Do you have any advice or tips and tricks for them to better understand how to price their own products? Is there perhaps research involved that they need to do, competitor analysis? Is there anything that we can give them so they can walk away and go, okay, I need to go away and do this?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, without knowing everyone's business sectors, I mean, I think I can only relate it to my own business, and Farm Boy, as we would see it, has never been the cheapest provider. So we've always looked at it as if you're going to be the cheapest, there's always somebody that's going to be cheaper. So if you're trying to compete on price alone, you're likely going to lose that. It's a runway down. In us, we really look at what is the value of the service we're providing, whether that's time, and we charge accordingly. If it's product, we're looking at the value of the product to the individual brand, but it's systematic across. So it's consistent. So people are getting consistent pricing from us, and they're getting what they look to as value for that product. We don't want to gouge. We don't want to be, we don't want to be crazy. We want to price fairly. And we want our customers to have a great experience with what they buy and how they buy it. And we want them to have great value out of it. But yeah, I mean, just sort of Farm Boy economics is we're never going to be the cheapest. We don't want to be. Often if you try to be, it becomes just a game of inches, and you often lose that battle over time.
But listening to you, though, I think your business, if a customer looking at it as a totality, I think your business actually giving a totality service at the cheapest rate. Because if you have a cheapest product, you do not have money to keep employee to be having time to talk to you. Your business allowing your employee to sit down before selling the products or the solution, asking how their business go about, what they want to achieve. Well, the reality is Farm Boy Fine Arts have to pay that time before the customer actually even agree to purchase. And I think it's a great business. I think it's no longer about whether your product is the cheapest or the most expensive. The totality of the solution that Farm Boy Fine Arts give to the market allow you to sit down, understand what they want to achieve, enhance how everyone feels through the product that you actually provided. And I think the minute a business understands this, they can go to the next level.
It's an interesting observation, Gustav. I'll give you an example. We had a hotel client maybe 8 years ago. We went to them. We were super, super passionate about the project. We wanted to take the project on. It was close to our heart. We wanted to do it. The money that they had indicated within their art budget was quite small. And we said, well, let's have a conversation about what you think that should be. And we set all the stakeholders down. Everybody sort of argued their position as why it should only be this. And we said, well, let's start. We'll start to engage your teams. We'll engage the staff. We'll start to build up this narrative in this art collection. You know what happened? They got such tremendous engagement from their team, from their front of house, back of house staff, that they ended up doubling their budget, which, we never go to a client and say you should spend more. We always go to a client saying, well, what do you have available? Let's try to be efficient with the money because we understand it. It's often, it's hard to understand until you really get into it. But they came back and they really doubled their budget, which they never thought they were even going to spend an inkling of what they started to. And what happened was they ended up having a whole other piece of experience, people traveling to the hotel, booking tours. We had to come in and educate the team, the staff. We've probably done 50 hotel tours with staff, with guests. People would fly specifically just to see the art collection and stay in the hotel. And they were just like, we never saw that. We didn't think that actually would happen. So when you're greeted at the hotel, the front of house staff is going, people are going, oh, that's a really cool piece of art. The concierge or the receptionist is saying, well, this is by this artist, and here's a book about it. Here's a tour. Their engagement just went up through the roof. And the experience that they had based on that created more revenue, more opportunity, and a tighter culture within their teams, which they never expected would happen. So we see that happen. But if, you know, but if I went to them in the beginning and said, you've got to spend this, they would look at me like I was a bit crazy, you know. But they really lived that experience, and they ended up, you know, completely reaping the benefits of it, you know, both culturally and financially.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing. And Gus, I'm looking at the time. We've gone over time, so I'm going to have to hand it over to you to wrap it up. Yeah.
Thank you, Natalie. So, Todd, once again, thank you so much. You know, you spend your time. It's late in Canada today, and yet you spend your time to share your insights on leadership and business. As mentioned by Natalie before, if we can learn from a company that's providing arts as a business, many, many business providing products, we can learn a lot from you because your product relate to make others feel good. And I think one thing that I learned is there's a couple of things. Your purpose as an organization, Farm Boy Fine Arts, is very, very strong. It's a very infinite purpose to change life through arts. Your business successful because you're building that value alignment from the get-go. From the recruitment process, you already search for people to enter your business that can understand that your business is not selling arts, but to change life through arts. And I think a lot of people can learn from that by reassessing their purpose from the get-go. Then you said, if you have passion and will, there's always a way. And that's including how you take risk when you need to pivot. Because the reality is, if you want your business to go for 100 years and beyond, to assume that the current business will be relevant next year, 10 years, 20 years is false. You need to be very open. You need to be very brave. But then you hold your values and your vision and your purpose, which is, in your case, coming back to change life through art. And then the last thing that I will remember is create a solution that touch the people so they understand how they feel. So anyone listening to this, anyone watching this all over the world, this Farm Boy Fine Arts based in Canada can service your business. Right. I mean, you know, they service business everywhere. And if you want to know how to make your service felt by your clients through arts, then Todd Towers, the CEO and managing director of Farm Boy Fine Arts, can help you. If you want to get his detail, contact us through Natalie or myself. We can pass through his details. So, Todd, thank you so much for your great insight. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we wish you a great success at Farm Boy Fine Arts.
Thank you, Gustav. Natalie, really appreciate the time. Wonderful to connect with you, and you know, we're all living in the metaverse these days, so nice to be better to be in person, but it's wonderful to see your faces and share this experience with you. So thank you both for your time, and thank you for thinking of Farm Boy, and certainly have the best of season, and Merry Christmas to you both and your families, and wish you a safe 2022, safe and healthy 2022.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Todd. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. For more information on Leader Talk and for some great resources to help your business grow, check out brainiac.com.au. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Leader Talk.
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 Leader Talk.